But I'm not gonna let them catch me, no. Not gonna let them catch the Midnight Rider.
Chris,
yeah.
Sports Radio 101.
It's midnight. We ride. The Fan, McMonagle here with you on this Tuesday morning, taking you for five, you know it, five straight hours until the warm-up show at 5 a.m., 888-808-1019. We got Rami Lavi on the other side. Rami Lavi, he likes to party. He don't cause trouble. He don't bother nobody. 888-808-1019. I don't know why I just said that. It popped into my head for some reason in the rhythm I said it. All right, Met fans. We're going to start with what was a very important win for the New York Mets. Yes, a lot gets lost around that, and there's plenty of talking points on a 9-7 game that you felt like you're hanging on to for dear life at the end, which is ridiculous when you score six runs in the 10th inning. But this was a very important win for this New York Met team. They're embarking on a stretch right now leading into the All-Star break and leading into the deadline that is imperative for this team. And it's hard for me, I have to admit, it's hard for me to look at this team through any other lens than how they'll perform and what it'll mean for the trade deadline. It's very difficult for me. You know, for the Yankees, you know what's going to happen, whether they're good, bad, and they've been terrible lately. Brian Cashman's going to either attempt to add or get killed for not adding. The Mets, it's a different scenario. The Mets, I don't know how Stern views it. It's our first year operating in the new Stern's era. Not the Grimace era. Not the OMG era. The David Stern's era. And we don't know how he wants to approach it. Honestly, we don't. There are some simple truths to life of operating in a New York market. And what we deem some obvious scenarios once a team has proven certain things to you. But we don't know what his thought process is. We don't know how he's going to go about building this team. And we don't know what he's going to think of come the trade deadline. We've heard reports that run the gamut from clearly buying to buying and selling to whatever the other case may be. And we just don't know. So for me, as someone who believes in straight up helping a team that has shown this kind of resilience and this kind of offense and this kind of playing over the last month, I need the Mets and you need the Mets and Met fans need the Mets to continue winning, especially on the road against teams like Washington and Pittsburgh and Washington, like you will face over the next 2 weeks, and especially to show this group that you can bounce back. Because if this would have been a loss, if you have a third consecutive loss, that puts a damper on all the fun, all right? I know there's a lot, I've heard the term fun police has been out there over the last couple of days. You know what else has been out there a lot? This is a little sidebar, I don't know why I'm going to get into it, but I am. A lot of people throw out on the bingo card lately. Have you noticed that? I felt like that expression really wasn't around a lot. I haven't heard that a lot. All of a sudden, didn't have, you know, so-and-so, I didn't have, you know, Johnny Jones hitting, you know, fifth and DHing on my bingo card. Like, all of a sudden, everyone's throwing out bingo card. I don't know. And I've heard fun police over the last couple of days. Well, I don't have to be the fun police, or anybody else doesn't have to be the fun police. If you lose three consecutive games, including one to the Nationals, a team you are competing with in this wild card race, and after the concert, and after all the other noise, and you saw Grimace out, you know, in Washington in full effect, all the fun that the Mets want to wrap up in it only works if you're winning. So these are important games. This was an important game to get back on the winning ways and not have a three-game losing streak in the middle of all this. And this offense continues to be resilient. And what I love most about it, now obviously they only score three runs in the game. You know, Gore kind of shuts them down, even though they get some base runners and hit some balls hard. And Peterson had, you know, a pretty damn good game for him. I mean, that's about as, you know, resilient. I know this offense isn't very much for the Nationals, but this offense for the Mets in particular, what I love about it is their ability. Like, right now, you know, in the sixth inning, when Tyrone Taylor hits that ball and it gets through Abram's legs, you know the Mets are going to make you pay for that. That is one of the hallmarks of a good team, a good offense, and a dangerous offense. That's what, and I hate to harken back to the teams, but like that's what those late 90s teams for the New York Yankees were. You could not make a mistake against that Yankee offense. They were going to figure out a way to make you pay for it. And when that ball goes through the legs of Abrams, instead of ending the inning, you know, and especially Alvarez, who we've talked about the impact of Alvarez, and we've talked about how important he is and their record with him and without him, and his, you know, the numbers of the pitching staff and everything. He's got a flair for those moments. And I just knew he was going to come through. And honestly, I don't know. I know Met fans, it's different. You're stubborn. And for Yankee fans, you never feel your Yankees are going to do it when they're playing poorly. And the Met fan has this, you know, it's hard to be positive. But with this team right now, I got the vibes of the minute that ball rolled through Abrams' legs, the Mets are going to figure out a way to score runs. And that is a different world than what we're expecting, or what we've been used to, excuse me, over the last, really this season, the last 2 years, where you know the Mets are going to come through. And that's what I love about this offense. And then J.D. Martinez with the enormous home run to give them the three-run lead after Bader gets hurt, and J.D. Martinez has a two-strike count on him, and they make a mistake. And he hangs a pitch in the middle of the plate with two strikes, a pitch that never should have been anywhere near where it was. And Martinez, who for my money is the beginning of all this. Now, I don't know if he's the most important part of everything that's happened along the way. Him getting hot was the beginning. Him hitting that home run against the Marlins for me was the beginning of this Met team and this offensive explosion that they've had over the last 3 weeks. That was the beginning for me. Now, Alvarez has been important. Vientos has been important. Lindor at the top of the order has been important. You know, guys coming through at the bottom of the lineup, whether it's, you know, Taylor or Bader or, you know, whomever, like, it's all been important. And they've all had different times of being the ones who were the most important. Nimmo's power surge, and obviously, you know, Nimmo hits his head in the bathroom. I mean, you can't make it up. You can't make it up. If he comes up with time travel, we got a real interesting story. If he comes up with the flux capacitor, then we really have an interesting story on our hands. Rami, please, just, you don't have to get on air. Just acknowledge you got the reference. Okay, thank you, please. I was going to lose it for a second. But whether it's him, whether it's whomever, like, J.D. Martinez got this thing rolling, and that was an enormous home run. And then to keep it going and to have Iglesias and the OMG hit that home run and build on it, all great. You knew they would come through. Yes, the Mets. Yes, the Mets. Now let's get to the bad. This bullpen is awful, right? The bullpen is a serious problem. And now over the last handful of games, without Diaz, it has really shown and reared its ugly head. And the idea you had to hold on to this game for dear life, and the idea the manager went so long with Jay in this game in the 10th inning boggles my mind. I think Mendoza's been a great manager for this team. I've loved almost everything he's done. But I understand that Reed Garrett hasn't been, you know, what he was at the beginning of the year over the last few weeks. And I understand that, you know, Jay's a lefty and there were some lefties in this lineup at that point. But you cannot get beat. I mean, you cannot. And whether it's, you know, Nunez came in and did a pretty good job. Obviously, they blow the lead on a fluky play. I got to watch that play again from Tyrone Taylor and see exactly what kind of hop he got. But they played some poor defense in this game as well. If you want to look at it, the defense in this game, although there were some rockets hit at him, especially Lindor, who made some nice plays and they turned some double plays. But obviously, Diekman throwing the ball away to start the inning in the ninth, whether it's Taylor in the eighth blowing that play and allowing the ball to get behind him in the tying run to score. Like, there was a little bit of sloppy defense, but this bullpen is now a serious problem. And they've been unable to come up with any answers. And listen, it's not easy to come up. Right now, they're down Diaz. They've lost, I mean, countless guys. They lost Reed Foley. They've lost Brooks Raley. They're down Drew Smith. Like, they're down a bunch of different guys. And that's why, for me, these wins are so important when there is a glaring issue staring you in the face with this team that needs to be fixed. They need to bring, and they need to do it now. The reports came out today that apparently Brian Cashman is now scouring Major League Baseball for relief pitching. I think, Stearns, I think this team has shown you enough. Look at how they battle. Look at how they fight. Get out there early and see if you can pick up someone to help along the way. I know Diaz is going to come back, what was it, 6 or 7? So he's like 4 games away from returning. But we don't know what kind of player he's going to be. We don't know what kind of pitcher he's going to be when he returns from his 10-game absence. This bullpen, whether it's Diekman, whether it's even, Reed Garrett, obviously Ottavino's fallen out of favor. Just right now, you look at this bullpen, you don't trust anyone to come in and really throw strikes. Over the last couple of games, the amount of walks, I mean, you can't score 6 runs. 6 runs in the top of the 10th inning. And then have your reliever come in and walk the leadoff man. That is unacceptable. That is unacceptable. And you cannot have that game in the balance against the Nationals when you scored 6 runs in the top of the 10th. So there are positives. There is a resilience to this team. There is something about this offense right now that I have faith in, even when they get held down for the most part against Gore, who they've been successful against in the early parts of his career here. They get kind of shut down, but they come through. You make a mistake, they pounce. And then when the game is on the line, after having an opportunity in the bottom of the 9th, after Diekman throws the ball away, and the young prospect Wood, who got his first major league hit in this game, as Wood is able to get to second base on a terrible throw from Diekman, and they don't move the runner over, they don't bunt. For all of you bunt lovers and all of you people who tell me the Yankees can't win because they don't bunt and don't move runners over, I know the Nationals aren't a very good team, but they hit a ground ball to third base with an opportunity to win the game. But the Mets get through that. They get to the 10th. They score 6 runs, and you're still hanging on for dear life. This was a huge win. The offense continues to impress, but it is quite clear. This Met bullpen, it is no longer an option for me. And this is what you get. And this is where, again, as I said, it's hard for me to view it this Met season and this Met team right now through any other lens than what are they going to do at the deadline. It's obnoxious, honestly, because it's hard for me to watch the games without that in the back of my mind. Or how does this play into it? How does that play into it? Every win matters. Every loss can tell you something. And it's a frustrating way to go about a 162-game sport. But that's how it is right now with the Mets. And for me, this game is an absolute perfect example that, honestly, Stearns is obviously watching. He should look at this game and go, look at what I have. Look at what I have. I have depth in the starting rotation where Severino's pitched well. I mean, there's even report, I'm thinking in my mind if I'm Stearns for a moment, let me role play. I've got enough depth between, Budo and Scott and Lucchese where I feel like I've got enough in this rotation where I could possibly even sell and still be in a good spot. Which I think is absolutely crazy. But that's how much I feel about the starting pitching. I've got an offense that has just been on fire and the best offense in Major League Baseball for a month now. They pounce on you every time you make a mistake. They come through in every big spot. They have the flair for the dramatic. You make a mistake, they will make you pay for it. And they're holding on, doing everything they can to hold on despite having a bullpen that can't win. In some way, shape, or form, this has got to be the perfect game to send to Stearns and go, look at what you have and look at what you need. Because all it takes is a couple of relievers. Don't play this game of selling off and buying and all this nonsense. Go out there and do what is now clear, what needs to be done, and add some relievers. And so make up your mind and do it as soon as possible. I understand that so many teams aren't in it. I understand that there's limited relievers out there and limited teams looking to sell. But this should be no longer a discussion on a day-to-day basis. He shouldn't do press conferences and say, well, we'll see. Because I think we have seen. And I've also seen the rest of this lousy National League wild card. I've seen enough. I've seen enough from this offense. I've seen enough from Lindor at the top of the order. I've seen enough even with Nimmo out of the game. I've seen enough from Taylor and Bader and even the lesser guys at the back end of the lineup. And then, of course, I've seen enough from J.D. Martinez. I've seen enough from Francisco Alvarez. I've seen enough. I believe in this team. Wins like last night are the perfect excuse to say, please help them. Because on one hand, they show you exactly why they deserve it. And on the other hand, they show you exactly why they need it. Go help the New York Mets. 1217, McMonagle here with you on the Fan. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. We'll get to the Yankees as well, as they look to open a series against the Reds and hopefully continue their winning ways. We'll get to, obviously, Hartenstein. We talked a lot about it last night during the show when the writing was on the wall for him leaving for the Thunder, but we'll get to it and what it means for the Knicks. We'll also get to the Rangers and what I think is being perceived by a lot of Ranger fans as an ineffective and quiet first day of free agency, as everyone they were targeting left for maybe crazy contracts, but and contracts you wouldn't necessarily want to sign. But at some point, this team is right at the precipice of winning a championship. Maybe you had to do a little bit more. So we'll get to Drury and his decisions with the Rangers, and then we'll get to Brian Daboll and his decision and what it seems like will be to have the play calling duties this year, which in my mind is the right decision. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. So we got a lot to get to over the course of the next 4 hours and 40 minutes or so. But your Met phone calls next, right here on The Fan. I won't let you down. Nice. Little George Michael. Little Freedom. 888-808-1019. Yeah. All right, Met fans. Obviously, there's two angles to this story. But for me, look, and I'm getting, you know, someone is so upset with me. I believe his name is Radio Clown on Twitter. You can hit me up on Twitter if you'd like. He's not listening because he's left. He's very upset with me. Apparently, you have to hate the Mets right now. It's amazing. You do this show, you can't do anything right. You're positive about the Yankees, you're a shill. You're negative about the Yankees. Jeez, man, have some perspective. The Mets have just won. They had this. Only the Astros are hotter in all of Major League Baseball. That's it. The Astros have been hotter. Besides that, they're the hottest team in the National League. They were 11 games under 500. They are now back to 500, I believe, today now. He's like, oh, only you could watch a game where they almost blew a 6-run lead. Yeah, you're forgetting the big word in that sentence. Almost. And the bullpen's a major problem. But that's a good win. They had an opportunity. They could have blown that game. They could have lost that game. Previous seasons, the Mets do lose that game. They needed that win. They got it. That's part of the discussion of the game. You could say whatever you want. The bullpen's clearly a problem. You need to go adjust it. You need to go fix it. And I'm done playing the game. I'm not waiting around. There was a question during David Stern's press conference about what's the deadline to make the decision. Sure, we all know July 30th is the actual deadline. But is there some sort of deadline in the mind of Stearns to make the decision to sell or buy or whatever, or both, which I still hate that idea. And he answered, well, theoretically, I could take it right up to the trade deadline. Yeah, theoretically, you could. Theoretically, you could. But at some point, you're going to have to make a decision on what you think about this team and whether you're even going to be open to opportunities. And I think this team's shown you enough with this offense. The bullpen's putrid right now. They've lost a bunch to injuries. They're still waiting on Diaz to return from suspension. So if you want to make the story about they almost lost the game, okay. They almost lost the game. They had a 6-run lead, and they almost blew it. They had the tying runs on base after going up 6 runs. Shouldn't happen. It absolutely should not happen, even with the Manfred man, even with the extra inning rules. It was a terrible display. And I thought the manager was late on the hook with Jay, who really hasn't had any reason to be put into sort of some circle of trust where you're, or, you know, some big time lefty where you need him to face the left-handed hitters. But they did come through with the win. It is a big win. It stopped a two-game losing streak. It's the first of this road trip where you're playing eight games against your opponents that you are battling with the National League wild card with. That's a good win. It's a must-have win. They were losing. They came from behind. They played shoddy defense. They allowed the game-tying run to score on a play that I guess is being ruled a double, which we could get into the scoring. Oh, we can get into the scoring during these games. We could do a whole show on how terrible the scoring is in these games. The official scores are putrid. We get on referees and umpires. The official scores in baseball games are horrendous. But that's a ball that needs to be made a play on. He allows it to get behind him, ties the game. And then in extra innings, Diekman throws the ball away and puts a runner on second base with nobody out, but he pitches out of it. And then they score six runs, an enormous home run from J.D. Martinez. And then you thought that would be enough. They add on the extra runs that you thought was just rubbing the Nationals' nose in it. And you need those runs because this bullpen is out and out disastrous, and they need to go fix it. But if I should have nothing but a negative take on a team that has transformed themselves over the last month, that has turned an 11-game under 500 team into a 500 team, from a team behind everybody in the National League wild card to a team right there in the mix and a game behind in the wild card, and a team that's offense went from being their main culprit to being the best in all of baseball, after they just won a game in extra innings on the road, if the take should be this team sucks, what a disaster it was to almost blow a six-run lead. Me and you differ. We differ on our opinions on that. The terrible bullpen's an angle of the story. It is not the entire story because the check mark goes into the win column. Tom in North Brunswick. What's up, Tom?
C-Mac.
Yes, sir.
For a Yankee fan, you are the most fair-minded fan. I'm an avid, diehard Mets fan,
mm-hmm.
and you have been nothing more, nothing less than very fair on the Mets.
Thank you.
So that guy, I mean, you weren't being negative. You're just stating the obvious.
Wanted me more negative. He wanted me to say, how the hell could you almost blow a six-run lead? I turned on the radio, and you're telling me about how they need to help this team, and the team is good. They just almost blew a six-run lead. That I guess I should have just harped on that and said how terrible the Mets are, but I didn't.
Well, it's the bullpen is horrible right now.
No doubt,
pitching has been pretty good.
Yeah,
but since they're 19-8 in their last 27 games.
Yeah.
And most of it's on their offense. I mean, I can't remember the last time that a team that they keep scoring 9, 10, 11 runs most of the time. And to tell you the truth, they should have took 2 out of 3 from Houston, but the bullpen blew it there.
Yeah, they're up 6-1. Saturday, 100%. No, the bullpen's a major problem. It is a major, major problem. There is no, tell me a guy you trust in the bullpen right now.
No one.
There's not a single guy I trust. Not a single guy I feel extremely confident in coming into a game. Not one.
Now, I wonder, though, I know it's a little early, but can the Mets, can Stearns maybe go to one of the teams that are completely out of it, like the White Sox? And, I know they must have somebody in the bullpen. Maybe they can offer him a Beatty or something.
Well, they have Kopech. That's the question.
Yeah.
That's the question. The question is whether or not Stearns is willing to trade a Beatty for an arm. I would too. I mean, it would have to be a pretty good arm, but that's the thought process, because this team at the trade deadline last year traded away all their pieces and talked about building the future. And I firmly believe, I don't want to accuse him of it because it was tampering, because I think he was still a part of the Milwaukee organization. I think him being hired as the next Met GM was the worst kept secret in baseball, and I'm sure he had his fingerprints all over the idea that they were selling for prospects and selling away Verlander as well as Scherzer. Like, I think that this was a process, and I think he wanted to rebuild this organization and take 2, 3, 4 years. Like, I honestly think that's what he wanted. And now to buck that idea and have to go buy for top-level prospects like Beatty, who, listen, I understand his failures at the major league level, but he turned himself around defensively. He kills it every time he goes down to AAA. And he was, at one point, the best third base prospect in all of baseball. So are you going to give up on that for a reliever? Are you going to give up on that for a pitcher who might help you for half a season? Like, are those the type of moves that he's willing and ready to make? And I don't know if he is, but for me, I think they've shown you enough where you have to go out and help this team. There's enough here. Like, and that's all I'm saying, because I don't expect the moves to be made tomorrow. And thank you for the call, Tom. I don't expect to, like, wake up to tomorrow and hear, oh, the Mets have traded for Kopech off of Chicago, or what, Tanner Scott off of the Miami Marlins. Like, I don't expect that to be the story I read tomorrow. But I do think that it just, there needs to come a point where they're sure on their footing. Now, again, how do I know? I don't. All I know is what I see in the press conference, what I hear about stories, and the idea that they could sell and buy and try and, you know, sell some depth to acquire more assets, and then maybe use those assets or other assets they're more comfortable trading to bring stuff in. And I don't want to rob Peter to pay Paul. I don't want to have to get Severino to justify trading away. I don't have to add the prospects that Severino might bring so that I can justify sending prospects out for relievers. I don't want to do that. I really don't. I want Severino making a playoff start. That's what I want. Go out and trade the prospects you have now. No one's expecting you necessarily to trade, you know, your top level prospects. No one's expecting you to trade, you know, Acuna. No one's expecting to trade Jet Williams. No one's expecting you to trade those guys for a reliever. But you have to be willing to move some of these pieces. You have to be able to go out there and attack and bring in bullpen help, because every other aspect of the team, now the rotation is solid. It doesn't go very deep into the game, which is all part of the same problem, bullpen getting, you know, all 27 outs. But functionality-wise, I think the rotation's been actually pretty good. Let's go to Zach in Rockville Center. What's up, Zach?
T-Mac, what's going on, man? I really need to start doing more overtime work for the railroad. I get to listen to you at night. You know, they gave the biggest douche at WSAN his own show.
Can you believe that?
It's a long time coming.
I know. Thank you. It's true.
You know, the
douche is play. That's the problem.
That's the thing. See,
I know.
And you know what you do that for, like people loved to hate Francesa. People love to love you, you know, but you're not that kind of douche. You're like, you're the douche that everybody that wants to give a big hug and listen to, you know, sports talk all night, man. Like that. So next time I'm offered overtime, I'm going to say yes, just so I can call up and talk to you again, man. But I just wanted to say,
I'm not sure we have the same opinion of douches, but that's okay. Let's argue about baseball now.
But we do have the same opinion on the fact that it is a 162-game season. And, you know, I don't know if it's because it's New York media or if it's because it's the Yankees and everything gets put under a microscope. But taking every single thing, every microcosm that you can, breaking down pitch by pitch by a bat by a bat. I saw a breakdown earlier with, like, the last five World Series winners, and they all had one very subpar month.
Yeah.
The Rangers, I think, went 11-18.
They blew the division
in July.
Yeah, no, even worse. They had against Seattle. I think they needed to you know, win a series, or I forget exactly the scenario, but they lost the last two games of the year to blow the division. The bullpen was in disarray. They had a bunch of time where the Rangers were bad at the end of last year.
The only thing that matters is going through these patches that you're going to go through and see how you wind up on the other side. And I think you and I both know the Yanks are the best team in the league, man. You know, Cashman's going to make moves at the deadline. I can't believe that more than half my friends, fire Cashman. Bro, you know, I'm 34 years old. I've never seen a losing season of Yankee baseball. Do you understand that?
Yeah.
As a Nick and Giant fan, I've never seen a losing baseball season. And he wants to fire Brian Cashman. That's the craziest thing I've ever heard. Why? Because he doesn't build a playoff contending roster, but so they can win 95, 100 games, but they're not a playoff contending roster. I don't understand how it makes any sense.
I mean, you know, it's if we didn't get off to such a bad douche start, like I'm with everything you just said there, Zach. I am. And now I'm not even sure you're referring to me as the douche. Maybe I misread when you said they gave the biggest douche at the station his own show. Maybe you were going to go name another douche. I don't know. Because me and you, I'm with you. I think it's completely overblown. What you just said at the end there is perfect. It's perfect. The idea that out of both sides of someone's mouth, they can say, Brian Cashman did not build a good enough team to win in the playoffs and yet acknowledge the fact that they win 99 to 100 games every year. It's ridiculous. If you win 100 games, you are good enough to win the World Series. Plain and simple. The 18 Yankees were good enough to win a World Series. The 19 Yankees were good enough to win a World Series. The 22 Yankees were good enough to win a World Series. They didn't. They got outplayed. They lost. Plain and simple. That's it. Like, and people have like this unbelievable, like, that's like hard for people to fathom. And as far as general managers go, all you can do is build a team for the 162 and hope they play well in the playoffs. That's it. There's no secret formula. There's no guaranteed way to win. There's no surefire move that puts you over the top in the postseason. There is no way to guarantee yourself these things. Because you have guys, Mookie Betts, great in 2018 for the Red Sox, great in 20 for the Dodgers. Since then, he's been arguably the worst postseason player over the last 3 years running. He can't buy a hit. There is no formula. Steve Pierce was kicking around every team in the American League East. Couldn't latch on. 2018, he found his way a little bit, won the World Series MVP. He was Babe Ruth in the postseason. You can't figure that out. The Red Sox did not know they were bringing in a playoff behemoth when they took on Steve Pierce. You build for the 162. You try and get the best team you can. And then you hope they perform in the postseason. It's that simple. And I am 40 years old. And I've probably watched prior to 1993. I'm sure I did. But for whatever reason, I don't really remember the teams the same way I do 1993. That's the first year I remember watching most every day and being involved as a Yankee fan. I am a 40-year-old diehard Yankee fan, and I have never seen a losing season. And if you think that that's saying, well, that's good enough, that's all I want. No, it's not good enough, but it is a baseline that no other fan base can have. And it is a significant thing to say and to feel and appreciate. When you are looking at a Met organization that we were talking about here and a Met fan base that I'm talking to right now, who back-to-back playoff seasons is cause for a parade. And you mentioned all the other teams in this town. Forget it. The Mets are at the top of the list compared to the Knicks and the Rangers, although they've made the playoffs a lot, but no championships. And the Jets. How did I not lead Jets? What's wrong with me? 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Let's get back to the calls. But yes, not to turn that into a Brian Cashman segment, the douche phone call guy did that. I didn't do it, but I got to answer. You call, you say something, I answer. That's how it works. He brought up the Brian Cashman. Blame him. Don't blame me. I'm just telling you the way it is. Tim in Norwalk. What's up, Tim?
Listen, the douche?
Yes.
He has to introduce himself from now on.
Yes.
On WFN.
Every time he calls, as the douche.
I know Brian Cashman looks like a weenie. I mean, but at the same time, I mean,
what's
like,
with all the douches and weenies?
I mean,
what's going on? But yes, Brian Cashman. Brian Cashman looks like a weenie.
I guess it's 4th of July weekend.
There you go. Let's get nuts. Let's loosen up a bit.
Yeah. All right. So loosen up a bit. All right. The Mets are cute. They're the JV. We obviously know that. The little, oh, my God, you know, and the grimace and whatnot. I mean, this is like who let the dogs out, who let the Mets out.
Right.
I mean, this is what the Mets do. And I'm a Jets fan, but I'm also a Rangers, Yankees, and Rangers fan. Rangers.
You're really a Rangers fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Twice the Rangers but fan. Everybody else is.
I know. I'm just upset about like what's going on with the Rangers and their trades and stuff. It's a little. It's a little like. All right, let's don't get Martin Straka. Don't do this again. Don't do this or whatever. At the same time, sign Shesterkin, put the C on his chest and make a note to the NHL that a goalie can be a captain. Because right now, I mean, why do you not put Kreider's the C on Kreider's chest? I don't understand it.
Well, first I'm going to have to figure out a way to get rid of Trouba, which is a fascinating situation. Because I just saw, I was traveling, I want to read the story when I get a chance. You know, his wife has a residency at a hospital in New York. So he doesn't want to leave. And he has a, I guess after yesterday, he was allowed to give a 15 team. He had a full, if I'm reading it correctly, he had a full no trade. And then after yesterday, he was allowed to pick 15 teams. They asked him for the list a couple of days early. He did not give it to them. He waited until the deadline of the last possible moment he could give them the list of 15 teams. He vetoed a trade to the San Jose Sharks. It's just an ugly situation. It's an ugly situation right now between Chris Drury and Trouba. He doesn't want to go. I guess his family loves it here. His wife is working here. And, I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Now, obviously, I think too many fans have been a little hard on him. I think he's still a damn good player, and he's represented the C fine. But just money purposes, the injuries last year were devastating for him. And it makes sense. It's time to move on. But he doesn't want to go. I don't know. It's going to be, they're going to have to eventually figure it out, because if the team wants to trade you, I mean, and it's this blatant and this obvious and this public, and you're the captain, how are you going to wear the C knowing the organization wants to move on from you? Like, eventually they're going to have to come to some sort of an agreement. But yeah, right now, listen, they traded for what, Riley? Riley Smith, excuse me, from Pittsburgh. They didn't. A lot of the contracts are crazy. I mean, the money I thought Stamkos was going to be a possibility. I didn't even know if that was the right move, but you're looking for someone dynamic, you know, someone who could possibly really step into that winger position on that line and make a change. But he got a 4-year, he got a crazy contract. Right? Kane got more money than people thought. A lot of the contracts were kind of out of whack. But here's the thing with the Rangers. The thing with the Rangers is they are right there to win a Stanley Cup. And they've been exposed. Like, for me, baseball, hockey, they're different. Football, different. Baseball is hit the ball, catch the ball. I mean, it's a little bit different. You can get exposed, I suppose, but the Rangers got exposed. That when it comes to playoff time, there is a level of hockey that they haven't been able to match. And their star players specifically can't find a way to match. And they needed some dramatic changes on some level to really kind of do, like the Panthers won the President's Trophy, lost in the playoffs, made the trade for Tkachuk, changed how they played. Now they're champions. Back-to-back Stanley Cup appearances, and now they're champions. That's the move I think most Ranger fans were looking for. Something that signifies, all right, we're all in. We need some changes. We need to figure something out. We're going to go get that winger to really make sure that, you know, Kreider and Zibanejad score in the postseason. We're going to go make sure this, make sure that. And ultimately, okay, they got some nice pieces. They added another guy in free agency. Like, all right, nothing of significance. And we'll see. Who knows? Riley Smith might be terrific. And I do trust Chris Drury on some level. I think he's done a really good job with this team. They had broken it down, you know, a handful of years ago when they sent that letter. And, you know, JD built up the team. And then they made that out-of-nowhere decision to fire JD. And they brought in Drury. And he's done a really good job. And they needed toughness after the whole incident with the Capitals. They got tougher. Like, they needed some speed and some youth. They got fast and younger. But ultimately, they do need now some, I don't know if it's toughness. I don't know if it's grittiness. I don't know if it's attitude. But there's something missing. And clearly, it's missing with their star players. So they need some sort of shakeup a little bit, despite the fact that they're the President Trophy winner. And it didn't feel like you got it while other teams were making those moves. Even Duclair goes to the Islanders. It felt like that could have been a move to bring him back into the organization after he's, you know, had a nice little career and was playing in Tampa Bay last year. Like, those moves might have made sense. It didn't happen. Now, there's still trade. There's still some other things that Drury can do. But it felt a little hollow yesterday as everybody else was making moves. And the Rangers felt like, at least for the early part of the day, they were sitting this one out. Which you did not expect from Drury, because he's kind of a man of action. That's what he's proven to be in the couple of years, handful of years he's been doing this with the Rangers. And today didn't feel like that, or yesterday didn't feel like that. But we'll see. They are close. I mean, they're a good team, and they have Shesterkin. And I wouldn't be, I mean, I guess, you know, they don't put the C on a goalie, but I agree. Kreider, I mean, he's the guy. He's been there the longest. He's their, you know, the playoff scoring leader, but he disappears sometimes. I love him. He's great on the power play, great on the PK, gets in front of the net a little bit, but 5-on-5 over the course of a season, I mean, you can give him the captain, but and you can hang his number in the rafters, no doubt, but you need more from him. Despite he gave you the Herculean effort to get them to the Eastern Conference Finals in that Game 6, but besides that, and then in the series with Florida, he did absolutely nothing. Along with the rest of, you know, Panarin and Zibanejad, all of them did nothing. Jake in Jersey City. What's up, Jake?
Yeah, hey. Are you nervous going to tomorrow's game with Tee on the Mound?
Excuse me one more time, Jake?
Are you nervous going to tomorrow's game with Tee on the Mound?
Am I nervous about what? With who? Oh, Luis Hill on the mound. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, am I nervous? I'm nervous about Luis Hill a little bit. We're concerned that he might be hitting some sort of a wall. It's not a game that would make me, you know, jump ship if they ever were to lose it against the Reds. But I'm nervous for Luis Hill, not so much the game. I'm nervous that we might never see the same Luis Hill we saw the first, you know, 13 starts of the season. So we'll see what happens with him. And then even if that happens, then I'm willing to transition to a bullpen role. There's other things. But no, I don't necessarily, as the day starts, you know, find myself biting my fingernails worrying about Luis Hill on the mound. I think he's going to be okay. I think he's going to be pretty good.
You know what's so interesting about the Rangers?
Did he hang up?
Yeah, he dropped off.
Okay. That was weird. He was fast talking there.
Yeah,
I didn't understand a word he said.
It sounded like he was a kid, so I wasn't sure. I talked to him for a little bit to see if I could get a little more out of
yeah,
him.
Yeah, no, I know.
All right.
You did a terrible job screening him. Just own up on it, okay? You've had a rough first 50 minutes of the show, okay? A rough first 50 minutes. I don't know if I've had another producer got me called a douche on my own show. That's the first time. The first time I've been called a douche on my own show, and you were the guy who screened the phone call, just so you know.
No, that's my bad. I'll wear that. I'll
okay.
That.
All right. Well.
The you Rangers, it's the opposite of what you said with the Yankees, don't you think, where they've been almost built for too much for the regular season.
Right.
Right? Where now they need to be built for the playoffs.
Well, that's why I specifically said, and with the Yankees too, let's be fair. If you have a team that is 100 games over and over again and can't win, there's an issue there. There's no doubt. The Yankees have a core issue with Gleyber Torres and some of these players that continually don't perform. And if you have a 100-win team, like, they won 100 games in 2019, were right there with the Astros, and then felt like they needed the ace Cole. They stole Cole from the Astros. That's the move you figure put you over the top. It didn't. But I feel like hockey's a little bit different, where stylistically, you can over the course of a series and the way hockey is played, you can systematically remove players from the series, like the Panthers did with Zibanejad and certainly with Panarin. Now, Judge hasn't hit, and I guess you could walk him, but he's still up there. Like, you can't, if he's going to play his best game, if Gerrit Cole's going to be dominant, you can't take Gerrit Cole out of a series. You can't take, you know, Juan Soto and Aaron Judge out of a series. They either perform or they don't. It is the most, you know, it is the most individual team sport there is. So I think it's a little bit different than hockey, but there's no doubt. Right now, the Rangers, you're right, they've been built to be able to power play, penalty kill, speed, and excellent goaltend their way to having a damn good record. It doesn't always have to be the President Trophy. It doesn't always even have to be a division win. But they're going to make the playoffs based just sheer talent, speed, goaltending. And that's great over the course of the regular season, and you score a lot of goals that way. But ultimately, when it gets tighter, when the whistles get tighter, when the playing gets tougher, it has not been a formula of success in the postseason. And it feels like, even though Edmonton almost came back and won a game, seven, and won a series, they didn't. And it felt like the Panthers recognized they needed to change their style and did. And it's a copycat league. And looking at the current champions, they won the President's Trophy. They lost in the playoffs. They made a trading away one of their best players and changing who they were fundamentally. And it led to back-to-back Stanley Cup final runs, including a championship this year. Chris in Inwood. What's up, Chris?
Chris, how are you?
I'm doing well, buddy. How are you?
Good. Last time we spoke, it was prior to the baseball season starting. We were talking preseason Yankees. Yeah. Amazing what Judge is doing. But I called about that.
It is amazing what Judge is doing. Maybe we'll get into a little bit of Judge later in the show. I mean, his numbers are it's crazy.
Imagine if he had a healthy spring training and started out right.
If he just had an average April, it would be it would be insane.
He had the worst April. He had the worst April of his career.
He had the worst month of his career, arguably.
Right.
It's crazy. Right. No, what he has done in May and June is bonkers. He has the. I saw a stat. I mean, there's a ton of them. There's whether it's looking at Harper's MVP season and comparing it to what Judge has already done. I mean, when Harper won the MVP a couple years ago, Judge has a higher batting average, has only hit three less home runs, and has only driven in five less runs. Or three less runs, and has the same or higher WAR, and he hasn't played a game in July yet. I mean, he's put up MVP numbers before July. Right. It's bonkers.
He's ahead of his 2022.
No, he's better. There's no doubt he's better. Right. I watched both seasons. Right. He's better now. Now the RBI numbers are up because the offense overall has been better. He's got Juan Soto hitting in front of him, so the RBI numbers kind of speak for themselves on why they're better. But no. On a game in, game out basis, the only thing different is for whatever reason, that year he had a couple of like signature walk off wins. He had a walk off win against Romano. He had a couple of moments where you were really like, wow, he's carrying the team. He's had huge hits that have obviously led to wins, but he hasn't had that signature walk-off moment where he already had a couple of those 2 years ago. But besides that, no, he's better now. He's got in the last 50 games, he has put together a 50-game stretch. He has the highest OPS of any right-handed hitter in history. No right-handed hitter has ever had a better 50-game stretch in the history of baseball. It's crazy.
Right, because Gehrig and Mantle were lefties.
Mantle's a switch hitter. But, yeah, typically left-handed hitters hit for higher average. You know, it's you face more right-handed pitching. So there's been, obviously Barry Bonds had put together an OPS.
Also a lefty, right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Barry Bonds had an on-base percentage of damn near 600. So,
I brought up Judge, but I really
That's okay, we can talk forever. What the hell, it's 5 hours. Updates, top of the hour, no one cares.
Let me cut to the chase real quick. So I'm 55 years old.
Cutting to the chase feels like the age is a waste of the cutting to the point. But
so
go ahead.
I was able to see, as a youngster, I was able to see, I'm 55, so I was a teenager when I was in the garden, you know, watching the 1980s Knicks teams. You know, I was able to see Bernard King in person when they were on WOR9, you know, free TV before cable. And long story short, I pay more close attention to the Knicks games than I do even baseball, you know?
Sure.
And a lot of people don't realize it. I'm not discrediting Hartenstein for what he was to the team late in the season and in the postseason. He obviously excelled. I believe he excelled his own game. But people don't realize that he was the third-string center. He was the third-string five. Jericho Sims was second position behind Mitch Robinson. When Robinson got hurt in early December 2023, last season,
yeah,
Sims was inserted into the starting lineup and was the starter for 21 games.
Right.
Until Sims got hurt, he hurt his ankle also for 2 weeks, January 27, 2024. That's when Hartenstein became the regular, you know, number five position in the rotation. And obviously he excelled, but what was he doing in scrimmages and in practice that had him third string prior to that? You know, I just feel like they can replace what he was somehow. I believe that in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because they survived without him before he, you know, surfaced and excelled. Grant, to his credit, he excelled, but, you know, what are you going to do?
No,
you can't give him $29 million.
No,
he'd be making more than Julius Randle.
No, I mean, I agree. This was unfortunately just a casualty of the NBA. Like, there was just no way to keep him. He had such a good year, he was going to get paid, as he did from the Thunder, $87 million over 3 years, and I think he's guaranteed 60 over the first two. It's just, it was never going to work. And you can't blame him for taking the money. As you said, he went into the season last year. And I'm not, I feel like when Mitchell Robinson got hurt, I don't think, I'd have to go back, and I guess maybe he's right about the Sims injury being around
Sims
the same thing.
Sims started, but it didn't matter. Sims played 15 minutes
and
started.
I mean, I felt like that was going to be a thing. It wasn't like Sims was blocking Hartenstein from playing. I think it became obvious that Hartenstein was the better player. And it hurts. I mean, I think offensively he had a lot to do with this team. I think it's going to be a new team, though. I think to make the assumption that losing Hartenstein is going to be such a devastating blow to this team when we haven't seen this team play yet. Like, Bridges changes how they're going to play. A healthy Randle, OG Anunoby, like, it's going to change how they play in some ways. Now, I agree that Mitchell Robinson can't do what he did, and I think they're better served with someone of Hardenstein's game as opposed to Mitchell Robinson's game. But at the same time, it's going to be a new team. It's going to be different. I don't think it's a devastating blow. Do I want him? Yes. Am I disappointed he's not here? Yes. But to just say he's what made it all work, or he was some sort of the glue to this whole thing, and now I don't know how they're going to make it work without him, I think that's probably a little premature. But we'll get into it more as we get through the show. 888-808-1019. We'll go to Marco here, and then we'll have a quick break after the update, and I'll come back and take more of your phone calls. We'll get to the Knicks. We'll get to Brian Daboll making his own play calls and why I think that's probably the right thing to do. And then, of course, more baseball as well as more Rangers. Everything's on the table for the next 4 hours. Zach Monagle here with you. Here's Marco Belletti.